south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
On the subject of bringing gold and precious metals through customs on through to Latin America. Man, I get emails. Seems like a lot of people listening to this program have their own little stores of precious metals. Gold, platinum, silver, palladium. Really, those four metals are the only ones worth holding on to. And you know, when really tough times come, and they are coming, platinum and palladium will hold their value, but you'll have a tough time getting rid of them. That is, people just won't know what they are or how to value them. So if at all possible, stick with gold and silver. That said, let me give you my take on it since I started collecting those very things when I was in high school. Nope, I wasn't necessarily smart or clairvoyant. I just happened to have an uncle who hated Big Brother and was way ahead of his time. And you know, he wasn't a renegade type. He was a church-going CPA. And back then, even now that he's passed, my family always referred to him as eccentric. Hey, my kind of guy. All right, now for my metals recommendations. Number one, forget about bringing silver down here to Latin America. Not because you can't do it, it's just too damn heavy. So if you bring any quantity of it at all down here, it's going to be big and bulky and a pain to move around. Not to mention, if you have any decent quantity of it, you're going to draw attention to yourself. Let me give you an example. Suppose you got a $1,000 bag of American junk silver. You know what that is? That's a bag, an actual canvas sack. A heavily reinforced sack, the kind you see in old gangster movies when the crooks are robbing a bank vault. So in one of those bags, you got $1,000 of face value in old silver coins. All of them either 1964 vintage or older. Could be dimes, quarters, half dollars, even silver dollars, or a mix. All of them worn and scruffy looking too. Now, they call it junk silver because the coins are only worth their value in silver. They're all pretty worn out. And they've got no extra value as coin collectibles. That's numismatic value. You know, it took me till I was around 35 years old to pronounce that. Numismatic. And a guy into collecting coins? A numismatist. Not easy to say after a couple tequilas. A tough one, but it's even worse if you're a stamp collector. A philatelist. After a few tequilas, that word philatelist on the printed page to some people looks rather obscene. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, ever since people started thinking of saving silver coins, or silver in general, for the sake of the future and the calamities we see coming ahead, that $1,000 face value junk silver bag has been very collectible, very popular too. Because it's something you could buy or order from a coin shop or pawn shop, hide it in the attic, or bury it by moonlight in the backyard next to Fido and Bruce. Now, bags of $1,000 of junk silver are excellent to store for long, long periods of time. And no matter what happens, they're actually real money, too. A quarter is a quarter, right? Even if it's an old pre-1965 one. Though, you'd have to be nuts or pretty desperate to actually spend those coins for their face value of a dime, 25 cents, or 50 cents. Take a pre-1965 quarter, says 25 cents on it, but by silver weight alone, it's worth around $3. Oh, and here's something interesting. Nobody knows just how many hundreds of millions of dollars of those pre-1965 coins have been spent. Many times at arcades, movie houses, and candy stores by kids who have dipped into their parents' coin collection and used this stuff at face value. Hey, I ought to know. Caught my sister doing that with my dad's coin collection. That was a long time ago, and she denies it to this day, but back then she was a pretty good liar. By the way, old silver coins are 90% silver. They're not 100% silver like some people think, because 100% silver is too soft and would wear out in circulation much faster than the 90% silver mixed with copper and a few other metals. Suppose you had a bag of $1,000 face value junk silver. I say, congratulations if you've got one. You're way ahead of the game. That's fine, even great if you're living up in the States or Canada and you plan on staying there. First of all, it weighs 54 pounds. So if you had a bag and you were flying from Cleveland to south of the border, you'd have to stow it with checked luggage as a bag. Of course, you'd box it up and all that, and people have tried. But man, with today's silver prices, a bag like that is worth over $11,000. So you definitely have to report it on the way out, because you have to report anything you're taking in cash and convertible assets over 10 grand. So you could take it all right, but you'll have to prove with receipts, bona fide receipts, where you got it. If you do that, and I don't recommend it, I definitely would get certified receipts, because you know those customs and TSA jerks will find any excuse to take it from you. So getting that stuff on the plane and reporting it is tough enough. You're going to get hassled. You're going to get grilled in the third degree. To top that off, bags do go missing, right? They won't let you bring it as a carry-on because they're limited to around 35 pounds. Then again, you could always take half a bag. That would be $500 in face value. Then you'd be well under the 10 grand limit, be worth around 6,000 bucks or so, but I'd still get certified receipts, and you're still going to get hassled. Then, once you land, that's when the real trouble starts, because every single Latin country has its own rules and regulations, and they don't always follow those either. So it's an unknown what's going to happen to you then, except to say you're going to get stopped, you're going to get screwed with, you're going to get taxed. And I've heard in some cases they'll keep it for a while, and you won't even get it back for days, weeks, even months. In other words, it's way too much hassle. Don't do it. I know. Everyone's saying, and they're certainly right, that silver these days is a much better investment than buying gold. Silver's got so much more potential upside. It's at a historic low in regards to that famous gold-silver price ratio. Oh, and for those of you listeners who don't know what that famous gold-to-silver price ratio is, you just divide the current gold price by the price of silver per ounce, and that's your ratio. And for a while now, it's been above 90, which is at one of the all-time peaks, meaning it's very lopsided in favor of buying silver. Now, if you were to average it out over hundreds of years, going back to the Middle Ages, where the ratio was holding around 12 to 15 to 1 instead of 90 to 1, even in the centuries that followed, the long-term historical average comes in around 20, so silver is definitely a better buy than gold, with an upside potential of triple or quadruple that of gold. Everyone who knows anything about gold, silver, and precious metals knows about that ratio, meaning you really should pick up some silver, except when you're trying to move the stuff around or ship it. It's just too damn heavy and bulky and garners a lot of attention, just slightly less than a drug dealer or money launderer would garner. Who needs that? Just look at it this way. If you had a $1,000 bag of junk silver coins, and they were silver dollars, there'd be 1,000 of them. And you know, a U.S. silver dollar, probably haven't seen one in a long, long time, I think they minted the last ones for general circulation in 1935. So where'd they go? Well, most of them got repatriated to the U.S. Treasury and melted down. And millions of them ended up, guess where? In Las Vegas and in gambling towns where he had the dollar slot machines. In fact, I remember my dad telling me that even back in the 70s in Vegas, there were plenty of them floating around in the casino. Lots of 40 and 50-year-old silver dollars floating around Vegas then. Of course, that was when a dollar was still a dollar, and no one was even thinking about saving or hoarding silver from coinage. No one in their right mind would ever have thought of a fiscal collapse or devaluation of the U.S. dollar, or going off the gold standard, which is exactly what happened right around that time when Nixon did take us off the gold standard and into the land of pure fiat funny money. Actually, it started a bit earlier when your pocket change was starting to get flooded with what we used to call sandwich coins, and how slowly but surely every bit of silver change started disappearing. Did you ever wonder why the silver in a silver dollar or the silver in a real silver quarter or dime has more than 10 times the purchasing power of its equivalent in today's funny money? In other words, the silver in a silver quarter has 10 times the purchasing power of a regular quarter that's in your pocket change right now. Now, as far as the actual value of the metal in your pocket change right now, the amount of silver in a silver quarter is worth probably 1,000 times the value of the base metal of a quarter in your pocket right now. So for people who lived through that change from real silver to base metal in your pocket change, you're the eyewitnesses to the first signs of the destruction of the U.S. monetary system. But you know that already, right? So anyway, my belief is everyone should own some precious metals. And your best bet in the long run really is owning silver over gold, platinum, or palladium. Though I also believe you should own some gold, too. My suggestion, if you're up in the States or Canada and you have silver, sell it. And when you get down to your Plan B destination here in Latin America, go to the coin shops, look on Craigslist, etc., and those gringo hangout groups on Fakebook. You know, even though I hate Fakebook, expat gringos are on it all the time, especially the ones that speak no Spanish. So once you land at your Latin destination, you'll be able to hook up with a lot of gringos who have stuff to buy and sell. And as you might imagine, occasionally you'll run into a desperate gringo seller. I see them pop up all the time. Well, not all the time, maybe every couple of weeks or so. Why else would someone want to sell their gold or silver once they're here in Latin America already? Precious and noble metals are one of the greatest insurance policies against calamities you can have. Hey, nothing against desperate sellers. We all have our ups and downs, don't we? Now, if you're up in the States and have a lot of gold, let's say you've got more than 10 ounces, which is over 10 grand these days, it could be a little tricky bringing that down, too. Though it's always easy to bring a couple of gold coins through just by using my buddy good old John Galt's trick. Each time he traveled to his permanent Latin destination, which was Antigua, Guatemala, he'd throw a couple of 1 ounce American gold eagles in with his pocket change, and he'd be sure to scuff them up a bit, too. You want them on the dull side so they blend in with the rest. Being sure to include some funky Latin American coins, too, that always seem to have brass, copper, and fake gold-looking centers. And when he was going through customs in TSA, he just tossed the handful of change in a little basket with his watch, belt, cell phone, whiskey flask, e-cigarettes, and Viagra. Man, old John Galt was always on the hunt for cheap Viagra. It's true, he had the gringo advantage. Plus, he was tall and had blue eyes. He was, nevertheless, for his age, a chick magnet. Albeit kind of a senior citizen chick magnet with bad jokes. And since his Spanish sucked and the girls spoke no English, that didn't matter. John Galt, what a guy. We miss him. Anyway, like I said, he had many hacks. And the one about throwing your gold coins in with your change when you went through customs, that was certainly a good one. And they always flew right on through. No questions asked. Oh, and there's another great little hack. If you've got, let's say, 2 to 5 or even more 1 ounce or smaller gold coins and you want to get through TSA, the scanners, and customs control, you get yourself a nice zipper belt. I mean, a nice, tooled, heavy-duty leather one, not a flimsy nylon one you get on eBay. You could easily slip 5, 10, 20, even 30 1 ounce gold coins in that zipper section. Of course, these days, if you got more than 7 gold coins, you're going over the $10,000 limit, right? So, to be safe, I wouldn't carry more than that. But, as to not arouse suspicion, and it's totally legal anyway. But then again, something being totally legal, when has that ever stopped Customs and TSA from hassling a person? Anyway, as to remain completely under the radar and without suspicion of even having gold coins on you, you load those coins in your zipper belt. And when you take it off to run it through the scanner, you roll it up in a coil and place that into the little basket. And why would you want to do that? Well, that's because the X-ray beam is coming straight down on the basket, and it's only going to be able to see the edge of your coin or coins while it's in the belt. Can you picture that? And you know, these days, many people, guys and gals, especially salt of the earth, middle class, and cowboy types, they have all kinds of spangles and studs and metal skulls, logos, Harley Davidson icons, you name it, all kinds of metal adornments on their belts, right? So those scanners are used to seeing all kinds of metal doodads and ornaments in them and on them. And the tiny edge of your gold coins might be seen, but they'll blend right in. You get the picture? Oh, maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that on the air, huh? Anyway, by all means, bring a couple of gold coins down every trip you make and skip the silver. Now, I know I mentioned this in a previous show a long, long time ago, but it's worth repeating. The fact is, there are very high-quality fake gold and silver coins and small fake silver and gold bars produced in high volumes in China. In particular, there are fake U.S. gold and silver eagles being struck, sold, and distributed for prices as low as 50 cents a coin. And you know, China's not cracking down on it. They're not saying that they're legal tender. They're just copies of existing coins. The problem is there are very good counterfeits out there, and it's so much easier to counterfeit an ingot or a bar than it is a coin. My advice: don't buy any gold or silver ingots at all. Always buy one of the big three so-called sanctioned government gold and silver coins. That would be U.S. Eagles, Canadian Maple Leafs, and South African Krugerrands, preferably in 1 ounce, half ounce, and quarter ounce sizes. The problem is the Chinese are so good at doing this, the fakes have exact weight and dimensions. And to the untrained eye, and even to a dealer without certain counterfeit proofing technologies, these high-quality fake products can easily be passed off mistakenly or knowingly as bona fide bullion products, especially if you're buying them from a place like Craigslist online, from a non-verified bullion dealer, or even from a booth at a prepper show, gun show, or coin show. In fact, the other day, my brother was just telling me that at a certain pawn shop we used to go to in Chicago for our coin needs, the longtime owner there, he's probably had the place 35 years, discovered some fake maple leaves and cougar antlers in his own collection. So if even these guys can be fooled, how are you and I supposed to figure this thing out? Should we stay away from gold and silver completely? I mean, look, suppose you were trying to sell some of your stuff and you found out it wasn't real. Would you not feel like the biggest fool? Besides that, who knows what the other party's going to do or think when you try to pass that stuff off to him? The fact is, you name the bullion or coin product and you'll find a Chinese wholesaler who'll make the fake version for you. And you'll find those companies right on the internet. In fact, I'm on the net right now and it says you can find copies of coins made by the U.S. Mint, Canadian Mint, Perth Mint, Mexican Mint, Austrian Mint. And they'll also fake collectibles, like fake silver Morgan dollars, walking liberties, etc. So how do they do it? Well, there are basically two methods. They plate gold and silver coins in bars with a thin layer. That they'll do for coins, but for bars and ingots, they'll hollow out real gold and silver bars and then refill them with tungsten, lead, copper, and or nickel. Then seal up the opening with gold or silver and do a nice polish. So what are you supposed to do? How do you check the silver and gold you've already got? Isn't that a scary proposition? Well, I've got some really good news for you. I mean, it's really good news. You know, in the past, you could always buy a bullion testing kit. 10 or 20 bucks. They sell them online. They're not too complicated. They've got weights and measures, calipers, acids, and are a little messy. In truth, a kind of a hassle and a pain in the ass. However, just recently, things have really changed. Enter the smartphone. You know, as much as I hate those things, they've got a really good app I'm sure you've never heard of before. It's called the Fake Bullion Ping Test. Now, you might not have known, but maybe you did, that every piece of metal vibrates when you strike it at a certain frequency. They call that a ping test, P-I-N-G. For example, a real American silver eagle coin will ping, or vibrate, at 6,145 hertz. Hertz is cycles per second. And a real American 1-ounce gold eagle coin will ping at 4,498 hertz. Well, wouldn't you know it, you could download free bullion ping test apps for both your iPhone and Android. So how does it work? You download the app, balance the coin you're testing on one finger, and put it near the microphone of your smartphone, tap the coin using your fingernail or another hard object, and the app will tell you exactly what coin it is. There are some apps, too, where you don't have to ping the coin. You don't have to hit it or balance it. You just spin it on a hard surface like a table, and the test result will show up right on the screen. The obvious thing here is it won't work with bars or ingots, only things that'll spin. And the ping test on the bars and ingots won't work either, because there are just so many hundreds, if not thousands, of variations of ingots and bars coming from hundreds of manufacturers and processors. Whereas government-issued coins like Canadian maple leaves, American eagles, Krugerrands, Chinese pandas, Austrian philharmonics, etc., etc., they only come in very few denominations. So my advice, have some gold and silver, but only government-issued coins. That way they're easily recognizable if you have to sell them, and you can test them yourself. By the way, speaking of those junk bags of silver, the Chinese aren't counterfeiting junk coins, not yet. Oh, they can counterfeit the coins, all right. The problem is they can't make them look old and worn like 50 or 60 years of circulation has done. So they just stick with the bigger and cleaner stuff, the 1 ounce and half ounce gold and silver government-issued coins, and real gold and silver ingots that have been hollowed out and replaced with a base metal. By the way, did you ever wonder why once in a while in the news, a story will pop up with the question, why can't we audit Fort Knox? Well, first off, not all the U.S. gold is in Fort Knox. In fact, it's been proven now that there was more gold stored in the Twin Towers before they collapsed than ever existed in Fort Knox. I'm sure you've heard that story before and are wondering, like so many of us, what the hell happened to that gold when the towers went down? Rumor is, somehow by miraculous coincidence, a couple of weeks earlier, it all got moved to another location. Isn't that funny? What a stroke of good fortune, huh? But back to the question of why is it impossible to get a true audit of what's in Fort Knox? Well, rumor has it, and it's a pretty strong and convincing rumor, that some of those ingots are fake. They've been drilled out and filled with tungsten. And nobody would want to face the music or even know what to do if that was ever discovered. Talk about sending a tidal wave of doubt through the U.S. and the entire world's financial systems. Well, it's been said there'll never be a real audit of Fort Knox or even the Fed. Because if even one gold bar was found to be fake, that would put in doubt the veracity of all the gold bars in the world that are in storage. So don't expect a real audit anytime soon. They may count the bars and take photos, but they'll never cut one in half. However, as far as we're concerned, do have some gold and silver. You can bring the gold down, but as for the silver, you can either sell it and rebuy it when you get here, or leave it with your mom or granny and stick it up in the rafters in the attic and tell no one. Except, of course, mom or granny. Oh, and as far as downloading your own ping test for your iPhone or Android, just look it up on YouTube. Not only do they tell you the best apps to get, and they're free, they show you how to do it right there. Enough said about that. All right, now an email says, Johnny, what do you think of universal income? Let's see, I think it's great. After all, 50 years of welfare has worked so well. I mean, everybody knows free money gives people such meaning in their life, such self-worth. Yeah, it's a great idea. Sign me up. And of course, that lame idea was born out of the fear of automation and how it displaces jobs. Now, before you fall for that rhetoric, think about the big game changers historically. One of the first ones being the steam engine. At the time, it completely revolutionized the planet. That, along with the car, eliminated the entire population of horse-drawn carriages and horses. And think of it. In the year 1900, the population of horses in New York City alone was 100,000. There were 11,000 cabs, too, all horse-powered. There were also several thousand buses, each of which required 12 horses per day, a total of more than 50,000 horses. They produced 2.5 million pounds of horse manure every day, which entailed a 5,000-man workforce of poop sweepers. Then there were thousands of caretakers, groomers, and feed suppliers, veterinarians and leather workers, and at least 5,000 blacksmiths that did nothing but shoe horses for a living. And there's that 5,000 tons of hay that had to be brought into the city every week and distributed by, what else, horse-drawn vehicles. In fact, in the Times of London in 1884, there was an ever-so-serious article written by a member of the Royal Academy of Sciences that said within 50 years, every street in London would be buried under 9 foot of manure. But back to that 100,000 horse problem in New York City. That meant tens of thousands of acres solely devoted to producing hay instead of food for people. And then there were thousands of smelly stables on prime real estate, too. Oh, and if you forgot to use the welcome mat before you went into the house, oh, yet somehow, without any political intervention or legislation at all, it got resolved. Even though tens, if not hundreds of millions of people worldwide lost their jobs. What a shame. There wasn't even a burnt Bernie or an occasional Cortex around to hand out free money to the hundreds of thousands of displaced workers in New York alone. Nope, they didn't have to raise taxes or give away free money. Anyway, just saying. Now, since we're talking tech, you've heard of 5G technology. It's coming on strong, right? It's supposed to revolutionize, once again, phone technology and allow internet services to be 10 to 100 times faster. That'll make everybody's hardware obsolete. Bernie and Cortex, where's my check? Free money? I'll vote for you. Well, unfortunately, 5G seems to be a bad idea whose time has come. Why? Because at that wavelength and power, it's not kind to living things. But nevertheless, it's coming, and there's going to be a little antenna on every single street corner, because that's the problem with 5G. It doesn't have long-distance travel. The waves peter out in a block or two. Peter out. Now, that's a strangely descriptive term, isn't it? Wonder where that came from. Well, let me tell you. As an engineer, biomedical engineer in a past life anyway, waves in the cell phone and microwave region are damaging to human tissue. It's absolutely true. In fact, during World War II, when they first developed microwave technology for radar and other installations, there were hundreds of people who were fried by just working around and walking past those antennas and towers. By the way, you know, if you bother to read the terms and conditions when you get a cell phone, you'll notice there's a disclaimer that almost no one ever reads. And you know what it says? And believe me, these letters are microscopic. Let me read this exactly from the iPhone statement. It says, when using your iPhone near your body for voice calls or wireless transmissions, be sure to keep it at least 5/8 of an inch away from your body at all times. Duh. Say what? Well, for cell phone companies, that's a get-out-of-jail-free card, because if you do develop an illness or cancer and you can prove it was cell phone-related, all they have to do is say in court that you didn't read the disclaimer. Now, without boring you with too many facts on this stuff, just send me an email if you're really wondering how bad 5G is going to be for your health and how you're already probably screwed with what you've been doing with your 4G devices. Oh, and as for you ladies who stick them down your cleavage, you see that all the time here in Latin America. Of course, according to expat Eddie, he says that's a good thing because it gives you a kind of get-out-of-jail-free card, too. That is, if you're inadvertently caught violating the 5-second stare rule, which I think only exists in the SJW first world, right? Anyway, if you want the real dope, send me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com and I'll send off to you an interview that'll scare the horse manure out of you. Anyway, knowing that 5G technology is not good for man nor beast, in fact, it's not good for plants either. You can expect if you live in an older, well-manicured neighborhood with boulevards and such, when they install those antennas, they'll send in the tree trimmers. Because, you see, those 5G waves are blocked by the branches and trunks of big, majestic trees. So you tree huggers are going to be very disappointed. Now, 5G is not in a neighborhood near you because they're still testing it. And just like big corporations test drugs and vaccines in Africa, working out kinks. Yeah, right. Well, Latin America is the testing ground for 5G. As this recent article points out from June 26th, Hawaii, I could never quite say that, plans its first 5G tests in, guess where? Ecuador, with other 5G tests in other South American countries to follow. It says, Ecuador is preparing for its first trials of 5G technology to be carried out by Hawaii, according to the executives of the Chinese telecommunications company. Hawaii, currently finalizing the program with the Ecuadorian government, expects to start permanent installation in 2021. Then it says several other South American countries are expected to begin 5G trials in the second half of 2019, including Uruguay, Chile, Argentina, and Brazil. Got that? So if you're living in Uruguay, Chile, Argentina, Brazil, or Ecuador, 5G is coming to a power pole near you. However, there are ways to protect yourself completely. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I will send you a very informative MP3 podcast. By the way, you've heard about this company, Hawaii. They have a huge share of the cell phone market in Latin America and China, of course. Though in the first world, much of their stuff's being banned. You've heard the story. They've been accused of implanting spy chips, bots, and hacking. So U.S., Canadian, and some European countries have banned the use of their equipment and software. Anyway, in a statement related to that, officials in Chile and Uruguay say they are aware of U.S. security concerns with Hawaii, but say in the case of Hawaii equipment in their countries, there have been no problems so far. Yeah, right, like China has so much to gain by hacking the governments of Chile, Uruguay, Argentina, and Brazil, countries whose cops have to buy their own bullets and gas for their patrol cars. But you know those sneaky Chinese bastards. They're out to steal secret taco and tequila formulas.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!